This is during Roosevelt's administration, you know.
What was the name of the book?
Memorial Day Massacre. I'm not sure that's the exact title, though. I'll have to find it. It's written recently, last few years. And it's about a steelworker strike at a high point in the labor movement. Like all these...
Who's the author? I'm sorry.
I don't remember. Sorry. Oh, okay. Yeah. All these. That's okay. I should remember the author. If I'm going to bring a book up, I should remember the author. But, you know, anyway, I've been very busy lately, and I got these wonderful books sitting there like you do, ready to read, and they're not getting read. But anyway,
I stopped watching TV because it's so numb, you know.
Yeah, you got to find time somehow.
So I just like, no, let me read a book.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Anyway, so what I was going to say, first we got to stop for 1 second. This is WMFO Medford, WMFO in Medford. Give our legal ID, and also known as Tufts Free Forum, commercial-free, community-based radio. You're listening to a slice of that community-based socialist alternative radio, talk and music from a working-class democratic socialist perspective. Your hosts there, myself, Jeff, and Diego. And we are going to be here for another hour. We've been talking about socialists running for office in this country with the elections coming up. We've been talking about a lot of other issues. Now, what was the train of thought I just lost? The book about the Memorial Day steel strike in 1937. This was the height of the rise of the CIO, where there had been really successful plant, factory and workplace occupations, like in the big car plants, but even in white collar situations, like Woolworth workers were sitting in and stuff. They called it the sit down strikes because workers were like sit down. That's not all they would do, but they got known for like, we're sitting down, not working. Oomph. They also would set up picket lines and stuff to defend themselves. It wasn't just like, oh, we'll sit down and wait for the cops to drag us out. And there were pitched battles on that, but usually the unions were winning. And in this Memorial Day case, it looked like that too. The steelworkers were trying to organize a place, trying to get a contract. Bosses were just vicious. And they got I think it was local or state police to come in and just start shooting. Live ammunition on unarmed protesters, killed, I think, 8 or 9 or something like that.
Roosevelt's many others. Watch, right?
Roosevelt called out the troops and others on more strikers than any other president. So this became, according to this author, I'm not sure I agree totally with this thesis, but his thesis is that this was a huge, huge blow against the labor movement. This was one of the most important defeats of the labor movement in the United States, that it had been really gaining hundreds of thousands of members, really growing, and this massacre put a chill into CIO organizing. Now, the reason that I have a problem with that thesis, I think it's too one-sided. The other thing is what you mentioned, Diego, the Communist Party supporting Roosevelt, the leaders of the AFL and CIO later in the late 40s making a deal about not with the government and big business not to organize the South as much. In return for some concessions in more densely unionized places like healthcare by employers. They accepted the Taft-Hartley Act in 1947 without a big fight, and, you know, still supporting the Democrats who let that in. Like Truman vetoed Taft-Hartley, but the Democrats pushed it through anyway, and he was really not against it fundamentally. So, and Taft-Hartley was a piece of anti-labor legislation that a lot of union leaders today would say it was pro-labor, but it was really anti. It took away the biggest strengths the labor movement had. Some of the biggest strengths, like solidarity strikes or what was known as sympathy strikes. Like if one union went on strike, other unions could go out and strike in support of it. That's illegal. All sorts of other things were made illegal.
Europe, it's a general strike. It's just automatic.
Exactly. And, you know, that's in a way that's not insurmountable, like because occupations of workplaces were totally illegal. You know, private property is the god under capitalism, you know, even if it's social property that the people should own, like a big corporation where all the work gets done by workers, you know, and it's like social production. Even there, no, that's private
like
property
Amazon?
Of one person, like Amazon, yeah, that's private property of one person or one board of directors or something. That's their private property. Oh, really? Well, what are all those people running around wasting their lives on making profit for those jerks then? Anyway, so, you know, so the labor movement could still do solidarity strikes, could still do general strikes, and even though they're illegal, just takes a certain amount of strength and vision that they don't have. They're not socialists. Not socialists or communists leading the labor movement for the most part in the United States now. So they lack that ability to see beyond bourgeois legality or the legality of the corporations, that they've set up a myriad of anti-union laws. In fact, they're about to do another one. I don't know if you heard about this, but there's this case called the Janus case. J-A-N-U-S. Some anti-union right-wing groups have gotten together to support someone who is saying, I don't want to have to pay anything to a union, even if I'm represented by the union. So what happens out, and this is a public sector worker, and public sector unions, meaning city, state, county, federal. This is the part of the labor movement that, although weakened, is still relatively strong. Like 30-something percent of those workers are organized into unions, whereas for the private sector, it's down to 6.4, 6.7%. So it's an attempt to break public sector workers by breaking them financially, to undercutting their money base they get from dues and fees, and then have people then work on people. The right-wingers will work on people through big front organizations. Big anti-union groups funded by corporations will then try to disorganize unions, decertify them, or once they're in a weakened state, or get people to not pay voluntary dues. So what you have now is, if you're in a union, say the person that's part of this Janus case works for public services in Illinois. Labor law, back to Taft-Hartley, like I mentioned, says if you're in a union, the union must represent you, even if you choose not to formally join the union. Like, so you're in a union workplace, but you're one of these people that hasn't joined. That's usually a tiny minority, because if you don't join the union, you don't get to vote on contracts. You don't get to vote on, your representatives, that sort of thing. So most people join the union, pay union dues. The union dues are collected automatically out of their paychecks and so on. Now, what this right to work legislation, including Janus, does, this Janus case, which the Supreme Court is going to hear sometime soon, probably in early 2018 or towards the spring, they're probably going to rule for it, which for this Janus plaintiff or whatever, because they want to hurt the unions. And the way this will hurt the unions is that the unions can't collect automatic union dues anymore from paychecks and stuff, and they can't also charge a fee for the people that won't join. And the combination of the two things is going to weaken the unions financially a lot, because people will... Like, the unions will have to all of a sudden administer to every single member, do all the paperwork and everything that now is done as part of an agreement with the companies. They'll have to...
go there personally and say, exactly. Hey, such and such, here's your 20. Or,
yeah, and that's not that. That's actually doable with union members. You could probably organize some of that, and they're trying to do that. Some of the unions that they think they're going to be affected, they're doing that. But what there's going to be hard is that they're going to have to represent people that refuse to join, and spend money on them, right? In a lot of ways, not just represent them when they're in trouble, but like contract battles and contract negotiations and all sorts of things, and they won't have to pay a fee. And the fees are usually almost what union dues are, and so that's how a lot of unions can survive being forced to represent people, and usually it's a small minority, but still significant overall. So if you get rid of the dues payment automatically, you get rid of the fee payments, and then you go around and tell people, hey, you don't have to pay this money at all legally. They're going to work on people. There'll be a certain percentage that won't pay, and they're hoping that'll bust the unions financially. It doesn't have to, but the bad part is that the union movement as a whole, the labor movement as a whole, is not publicly... trying to form a mass movement against this. They're linking it to other issues, linking it to the struggles that are happening now, Black Lives Matter, whatever.
Yeah.
They're not linking it to getting Trump out of office. They're not linking it to $50 minimum wage campaigns. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to organize and say, here's what unions do and what we can do, and they've been a big part of 50 Now campaigns and others. Here's what we can do. Here's how we can help. You help us. Boom, we put pressure on the Supreme Court. We force the Supreme Court to not rule in favor of Janus. And people might be saying, well, how do you pressure the Supreme Court? It's happened many, many times. Think of the Nixon court, conservative court, conservative administration. During Nixon administration, Roe versus Wade was allowed to go through. They've, abortion rights, basically. The beginning of
A lot of progressive stuff, the EPA and things like that, has been passed under him.
Yep, exactly.
On his administration, his watch.
And the conservative
it was because of the grassroots
movements. Right, huge mass movements at the time. And there have been other examples. The Supreme Court's not this neutral thing that doesn't care what the people think. I mean, they don't care, but they are susceptible to pressure. They usually don't care what people want, but they are susceptible to pressure. They don't want people to revolt. They don't want destabilization, etc. And there would be a way to form a mass movement to pressure the Supreme Court to not rule in favor of this Janus case, but they're not doing it. What they're doing, what some of the unions affected are doing, is they're trying to organize within, which is fine. They should be doing it anyway, you know, to set up a structure where they can still collect dues and stuff. That's fine, and they should do that, but it's not enough. It's not enough. And also, where right-to-work legislation like that has passed in other areas statewide, it hasn't confined itself to collection of wages. You know, it's gone into other aspects of like what you, a collection of dues, I'm sorry. It's gone into other aspects of like what you can negotiate or not negotiate, stuff like that. So every victory for the right, every victory for anti-union forces, right or liberal, will then translate into trying to weaken the unions more. So anyway, we'll come back with, we're going to, if it's all right with you, Diego, check into the international scene a little bit.
Yeah.
And right now we're going to go to some music, and you're listening to Social Alternative Radio, and we'll be back soon.
Spinning around faster, faster. The center cannot hold. the lights on the Age of Reason!
Inside in the days of 39. Oh, please leave the Vendana open. Federico lockers dead and gone. Bullet holes in the cemetery wall. The black car of the Johnny of the beer. Spanish bombs on the Costa Rica are dying in on the DC-10 tonight. Spanish bombs. You got the gear of Benito. Just the quella. Oh my god, a thong. Infinito, just the quera, oh my god, it's all Spanish weeks in my disco casino. The freedom fighters died up on the hill. They sang the red flag, they wore the black one. After they died, it was Mockingbird Hill. Back from the buses, went up in flashes. The Irish too, drenched in blood. Spanish bombs, shattered the hotels. A senorita's old was knitting the bar. Bonito, yo te quiero, oh my corazón. Spanish bombs, yo te quiero y bonito.
Spanish Bombs by The Clash, London Calling, back in the day. I don't remember what year that came out, 79. And then we got, before that, New Model Army, Here Comes the War, from New Model Army's original 20. And Spanish Bombs was not an random pick. Actually, neither was New Model Army's song. Kind of fits into what we're talking about if you listen carefully. But we want to talk about the situation in Catalonia, which has not gotten much press here in the United States. If people are listening from... through WMFO.org, a way to listen by computer, listening from other countries, which sometimes happens, they might be a little surprised at that because it's big news in Europe. I was listening to a French equivalent of CNN TV station.
France 24?
Yeah, France 24, yeah. And they were talking about it for a whole day practically. I mean, hours. They had a little commentary for hours the other day on it. And it wasn't.
We get that in Cuba when I go there. It's like part of the France 24. Let's just see what they're saying. You know, it's in French.
Yeah,
I have my French friends. You know, what is he saying?
Yeah,
what is he saying?
They actually have it in other English and Spanish and Arabic too.
Yeah,
but
Al Jazeera.
But yeah. Yep.
BBC.
Yeah.
You know, well,
BBC's so right wing now though. It's like NPR. Very right wing now. I was listening to NPR.
Of course, different sections. They've got BBC America,
two, yeah,
BBC
two,
Africa,
two, yeah.
BBC.
That's true. You're right. Yeah. I was listening to last week, last Saturday afternoon, I believe it was, this program on National Propaganda Radio, locally, I think it's produced, I'm not sure, it could be nationally produced, called Innovation Hub. And it's supposed to be a science program, so I've listened to it before about science and stuff, but I guess they're also into, let's say, to be charitable, sociology, because it was a whole show about charter schools. And these are schools in the United States that receive public funding but are controlled by a private corporation, and the money goes to a private corporation. So public money in the form of corporate welfare going to a private corporation, control over the school by the private corporation, including selecting which students they want to select and following whatever rules they choose to follow or not follow, although there's supposed to be agreements on what they're supposed to do. These are loosely interpreted. And they're anti-union, of course.
So all the teachers are not in the
They're not going to be in the union for the most part. There have been some successful organizings of charter schools. Whether they've gotten first contracts or not, I don't know. So last year in Massachusetts, and you know, this show emanates from Tufts University in Somerville, Medford, part of Greater Boston, and so part of Massachusetts. In Massachusetts, there was a statewide referendum that I think big business was quite confident to pass, because there are plenty of liberal Democrats supporting charter schools. Obama administration supported them. Walsh supports charter schools. There's all sorts of, although he came out against this particular question under pressure, he does in general support charter schools. The liberal pundits on local NPR support charter schools, all that kind of stuff. The deck was stacked, man. It was stacked. And one of the big targets of charter school propaganda is the teachers' unions. They are vilified. They are demonized. So I'm listening to this program, Innovation Hub, on National Propaganda Radio, and they had two pro-charter school people on it and zero anti-charter school people. And despite what I just said, you don't have to dig that far to find an anti-charter school person. They're out there among the left, among progressives, and others that care about public schools, right? Because it's basically a step towards privatization of education. And even there's a famous pro-charter school person, nationwide figure, who one day switched sides and became anti-charter school.
Didn't she?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you remember her name? Because I don't. another thing I should have written down, but I know I wasn't going to talk about this, but anyway, this happens when you're doing the unscripted freeform talk show. You got to come up with the memory's got to be sharper, but anyway, yes, so a famous pro-charter school person, probably in the Obama administration, but I'm not sure about that, became very much anti-charter school, and I won't say why, because I can't quote from the book or anything, but some people at least get woke up to what charter schools are about because they see it as a step towards privatization of education, and then they do a little research into what America was like when it was all private schools.
And also defunds the public schools.
Oh, of course,
that are
absolutely
still already in financial crisis.
That's one of the main arguments that people use now without much research. It's just a common sense thing. You're absolutely right. Oh, charter schools are going to get money now. Where's that coming from?
Our money.
Our taxes, right?
That's like,
so you're going to be giving money to corporations? And then they're going to compete with the public schools until they gobble up more and more of the public schools. So pretty soon you're just giving all your tax money to corporations to run.
Democracy and my money being spent.
Yeah, you have no control
over
it. No control.
To, you know, basically select my child or not select my child.
Right, and no control over that. And here's the other thing about it, that when you do the research, is you find out that there's big money behind this. Koch brothers, Bill Gates,
prison system.
You know, all those people. They're really into charter schools. So last year on the ballot was this question 4, actually, I think it was. Not 1, but I could be wrong.
Was it a 2? Question
or
2. Say no on 2?
2, it was 2. Yeah, it was 2. You're right.
2.
We were both wrong. It was 2. Question 2. So question 2, you know, I started to hear about it, you know, doing political work in Worcester, and Socialist Alternative quickly endorsed both in Worcester and Boston, endorsed a anti-question 2 coalition that was getting going, mainly run by the teachers' union. And we even had one person in Socialist Alternative in Worcester became a full-time organizer for this. That was this person's job. And I was a little skeptical about how it was going to go, but I had put the sign up on my yard, and I'm doing the signing petitions, I'm doing stuff. and a lot of people are doing stuff. And they had an office in Worcester that I looked into one night, and that's pretty good, pretty high energy. I'm kind of, this is interesting, you know? And sure enough, the polling started to come in, and people hated it. People, the average person who usually gets manipulated and messed around by the corp media and all these people coming out, Seth Moulton was for it. All these rising Democratic Party stars were for raising the cap on charter schools, meaning making more charter schools happen in Massachusetts than they were allowing per year. This is what the question was. And all the liberal pundits are for it, practically. Not every last one, but most of them. Big money's behind it. This is like the best of both worlds for big business, because they got the liberals shilling for them here publicly. Usually that's private, and all sorts of other things. So, but also the polling data is coming in. We don't like it. People are doing just the common sense thing you just said a minute ago. Where's that money going to go? Where's my money going to go? It's going to go to private school, you know, essentially a private school, you know. And the charter school people will say, no, charter schools are public schools. Complete lie. It's just a question of labeling. They're labeled
public. What's public
schools.
Is my money.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's what's public.
The funding is public. The control is private, and you're going to get screwed at the end. They go to the worst neighborhoods, and say and plop down $1 million, not for the schools in the neighborhood.
There's one right up the
but
street
for the charter
from you,
school.
Prospect.
Yeah, I know.
Hill
I know.
Charter school.
Yeah, I see
right
a lot of cops in front
right
of that place.
Right by Harvard Street and Essex Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Right down the street where you work.
I've been there. Yeah, and I've been past there a lot.
That building was condemned. I remember it was asbestos and everything, and then they redid it. I remember like in the 90s, nobody was there. Nobody was there. What was being held there was the communion classes on Sunday sometimes from that church next to it.
Yeah.
But they redid it and everything, and now it's a charter school.
Well, that's part of my point, right? They give, instead of the, if the Koch brothers want to come in and do their pennies in charity, throw the pennies, which is millions, at the public schools. No, they don't do that. They put it into the companies that are going to run the charter schools and the propaganda for charter schools. But the end of the story is that, what was it, 64-65% voted no on two, kept the charter schools down. And what's so funny is that one day before the vote, literally up to the day of the vote, you hear the liberals coming in on the radio and the TV, this is great, charter schools, blah, 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 vote yes. And when they lost that, they just shut up about it. They didn't say, oh, by the way, I was wrong about that. People didn't want that.
Baker say
they
anymore,
shut up about it. Oh, my God. Baker, yeah. I'm not calling Baker a liberal. I'm just saying they were Baker
but
takes
he was going
liberal
on
positions.
And on and
oh,
on.
Yeah, he loved it. He
and
loved
all of a sudden,
it. Yeah. They were
what
quiet
happened,
after
Baker?
That. They were quiet.
What's going on? No
comments. Oh, yeah. They were quiet after that. It was one of the best moments politically in my life, actually. There have been a few. But just to hear that silence, that embarrassed silence from the pundits, from the rich, the prostitutes of the ruling class in the corporate media. And you're shutting up about that. Good. But they didn't shut up forever. Because I'm hearing it again. I'm hearing it on that show, Jim and Marjorie Egan, relentlessly anti-teachers union and anti-union in general. This Innovation Hub show from 2 weeks ago, this person got on, or last week, got on, and with the two pro-charter school people, and they would say the vilest things about the teachers union, you know? Without any attribution of fact or you know, citation, without any comeback. The person, the host of the show, just say, yeah, just go along with them.
Mm-hmm.
It was vile. It was just such.
It was like
the corporate, the Koch brothers' money going into NPR, directly translated into a show.
The person that was running the show just kind of just shut up and just went with it.
No, the promoted host. You could tell she didn't know anything about the issue, because why is it on Innovation Hub? It makes no sense. But she didn't know anything about the issue. She's letting them say whatever they want and going along with it, just nodding either out of ignorance or agreement, hard to say which. But there was no pushback. There was no contrary opinion. There was no reality to that show whatsoever. Yeah. So
no
here
history.
I am.
Wait, you want us to go back the way it was, where just the elites get
exactly. That's what they exactly want. Yeah. And they'll market it the other way around. Oh,
same Harvard
help.
Used to be. That's how Harvard
people.
Was. Only the elites
Harvard
come
is still
here.
That way, man. Yeah. Are you kidding? I worked there. Are you kidding? Harvard is legacy students, meaning people that their parents and grandparents went there, regardless of their grades or whatever, they get in that school. And then there's...
You ever seen Paper Chase?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a good movie.
It's a good movie, but I just get so mad.
Oh, yeah, the way they train them to think is completely wrong, basically. Paper Chase. But then there's... at Harvard, there's this smattering of financial aid that is not what Harvard purports it to be. It's not enough. So there are some working-class kids kicking around Harvard. But it's mostly the legacy and people that could afford,
because
their parents were rich, could afford a lot of tutors and stuff like that. Yeah, some of the SLAM student labor action movement people are great. Yeah, they're great students. I'm not condemning. Hey, I don't condemn. When you're talking about the rich, let's make this clear for social alternative listeners. When we're talking about the ruling class, the rich, the big corporate, we're not saying every last person is evil that's rich. I had a friend in college. I'm still in touch with her. Very rich person from France. I like her. She's a nice individual. Right. But I'm sorry, the class she comes from and what they do, what her, you know, parents did or father did and so on, is, and she would admit to that, actually, is not a nice thing. OK, well, they're part of a system.
I was reading a biography on Engels.
Yeah, he came from the bourgeois.
His father owned a textile.
Yep. There you go.
Ended up being against his whole father's company and the exploitation of the people.
Yeah.
And
wrote great stuff. Yeah, you know. He organized. I mean, there's you know the old saying: it doesn't matter where you're from; it matters where you're going. And that's true politically sometimes. That's very
true. But which person can say, "Hey, enough's enough"?
Yeah.
I think no. I mean, we need to reorganize.
There are definitely rich people that have looked around and said, "Gee, there's everything here you would want." Under the paradigms of capitalism, and out there are people with nothing that has to affect them, you know.
Yeah.
And some of them doesn't have to. Some of them it affects, and others it doesn't.
So what affected him, Engels, according to the biography, was when he went to England.
Yeah.
And he seen
the conditions
Manchester.
The working class in England.
Two different contrasts. Yeah. Okay, the has and the has nots. The majority is the has nots.
Yep.
You have the has.
Yep.
Which is, you know. Oh, beautiful, you know, mansions, this, that, everything, health, food, all you want, and then you have the opposite.
One of his most famous books was the Condition of the Working Class in England or something like that. Very famous.
Really?
Yeah, very famous book. Yeah. By Engels, yep. Hey, we got to do it. Before we get back to Catalonia, which we digressed from, which is fine. We do digressions here. As long as they're left-wing digressions. Anyway. Numbers to think about, public service announcement here on WMFO. Some numbers to think about. The United States has less than 5% of the planet's population, but incarcerates 24% of its prisoners and accounts for 43% of the world's total military spending. This is a public service message from WMFO and Medford Tufts Educational Radio. And by the way, that's another name for this station, Tufts Educational Radio. I really like that name. Although, we have to say for this show... it's not just about education. We're hoping that you will hear some of these things that we're talking about, and like Engels, for example, or if you're not of those means, that you will still, if you're just a worker like myself or whatever, you will, or a student, a youth, you will get involved. Actually, it's not just about information, alternative information, education. I wish that was enough, but it's not. It's about getting involved in organizing. And by organizing, actually getting to the point where you can get information out. But it's also about doing things and organizing political activities. And by the way, might as well, I don't know why I held off on this. I wanted to come up with this early in the show. You heard about the 16th. Have you heard about that yet? Well, there's different dates for different groups commemorating the anniversary of Trumpo getting elected. So on November 16th, like I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm going to get into the details now real quick. In some cities around the country, wish it was more, but it's a decent number. Socialist alternative, socialist students, millennials for revolution, which used to be millennials for Sanders or Bernie. I think it was millennials for Bernie, are all coordinating and organizing 1 year is enough rallies. The one I'm working on is in Worcester, Massachusetts, at 1 p.m. at Clark University on November 16th in Red Square, it's called, believe it or not, in Clark University, Red Square. And the main demands that we're putting forward is part of a coalition. There will be other groups there, progressive and left groups. The main demands that we're putting forward are, one, no racist deportations and racist policing, Medicare for all, free reproductive care, and free public education, cancellation of all student debt. Now, these are all, of course, relevant to the Trump administration. I think most of our listeners know that, but I'm just going to spell it out a little bit. Obviously, Trump has emboldened ICE and the ICE raids and the whole deportations that are happening, attacking the DACA program, trying to end that. Racist policing has continued and been emboldened under Trump. The protests that happened, starting with Ferguson and so on, are continuing in various cities from time to time. That hasn't gone away, obviously. Medicare for All is related to the failed attempt so far to destroy what little improvement was made with Obamacare and throw things back even further, although they are getting away with defunding parts of Obamacare that is and also weaknesses in Obamacare to begin with that rely on insurance companies providing resources and care and so on. That is all very precarious right now. Then, of course, public college and cancellation of student debt. I don't know if you noticed, Diego, but one of the things so far in the tax thing that the Trump administration is trying to put forward and the Republicans, and we'll see about the Democrats, some of them are going to like it, I think. There's a thing about you can't write off your student debt on your taxes. You mean pay no tax on your student debt. That's one of the things they're going to get away with.
They wanted it. So in other words, the debt that I'm paying, I usually get a slip at the end. I can put that into my income tax.
They're going to tax it. Mm. Yeah. So that's one of the ways to screw working people, since student debt is so huge now. So look around in your area. Check out socialalternative.org. Check out Social Alternative in Boston for information about what's happening in Boston around the 16th. And if you're out in the Worcester area, come to the rally 1 p.m. at Clark University. And again, socialalternative.org for more information about this happening in different areas. And I'm just looking quickly for a Boston. I know we have a Boston phone number here, but anyway, just check out socialalternative.org and then go to the local areas. Another public service announcement, Food Not Bombs public service announcement. Food Not Bombs is a loose-knit group of independent collectives serving free vegan and vegetarian food to others. And each group is independent, invites everyone to participate and make decisions. Food Not Bombs is dedicated to taking nonviolent direct action to change society so no one is forced to stand in line to eat in a soup kitchen, expressing commitment to the fact that food is a right and not a privilege. For more information, visit foodnotbombs.net. A public service message from Food Not Bombs and WFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. So they're working in over 1,000 cities, providing food here and there. I'm familiar with it in the Boston area, and it's it's sort of an augment to bigger efforts to feed homeless people, but sometimes they feed people at protests and stuff, and so it's a modest effort, but one if you're interested in that angle.
Well, yesterday I seen a sign in Central Square. There was a table of people that was anti-Trump, and there was one thing that really caught my eye was the charity will not free us.
Charity won't set you free. So true.
Or something like that.
Yeah. No, I know that's true. That's why I kind of qualified that public service announcement a little bit, because, it's tricky. It's on the one hand, you want to give people help right away when they need it, but you have to understand at the same time that if you're putting all your effort into that and not changing the system, you're just perpetuating the system. It's a difficult thing. So in Central Square, I work in Central Square, and there's so many homeless people because there's a shelter there that, like, if the average person went by and gave everybody money, you wouldn't have the ability, I don't see many rich people running around that, you know what I mean? And I've seen Food Not Bombs set up there, which is good, give some free food out, that's fine. And unfortunately, the cops are arresting Food Not Bombs
for giving out food.
Yeah, in different cities. Wow. Down in Florida, they really had a hard-on for them for a while. They were, like, really going after them. It was just horrible, They were like, oh, God, the cops just couldn't leave them alone. I don't know if that's still going on or not. But basically,
rap sheet is. I got arrested for feeding homeless people.
Yeah, exactly. No, they were. There was one person was getting.
How can that pass in the court? Like,
exactly,
really?
Exactly.
And they probably do it's a health issue now.
That's what they do. That's what they do.
You walk the health inspector thing. You didn't, you don't have a permit or
walk into your average 7-Eleven and see how healthy that is. But they get to operate. You know, no. Basically, they were going after this one older retired person that was making that like their main kind of activism or something, and that was getting some national press. They kept arresting this old person for actually trying to feed people free food. So, but obviously there are limits to that as well. Food, not bombs. So back to Catalonia, which we started to talk about, and we're running out of time now. But so here's the situation in very briefly. Have you heard about this much? I mean, through American sources, or where'd you hear about it?
I'm Cuban sources on the internet.
Oh, okay, there you go. So,
we're big on it. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so you're going to have to,
They're going through their pains like we went through ours.
Yeah, you're going to have to, go beyond the American corporate media to hear about this. But basically what happened
was France, like you said, the channel that, you know, they dedicated a whole hour to. And
yep, there you go. France 24. So
even Russia Today, I got good stuff on
that. Yeah, there is a news thing in America. I don't know if they've been covering Catalonia, but they're good on a list called Real News out of Baltimore. We've talked about that before on the show. So what happened is that there's a part of Spain called Catalonia. That's where Barcelona is, sort of the north. Is that northeast or northwest? Northeast. So
that's not the Basque area.
No, it's not. There's three areas in Spain.
That's another area that wants independence.
That want independence: Andalusia, I believe, the Basque country, and Catalonia, and
Galicia.
They have their own language, Catalan. They have traditions going back a long time. Of being their own area, but during the Spanish Revolution or Spanish Civil War, as some call it, in the 1930s, where a progressive government was elected but then defeated by fascists led by Franco and helped by Hitler and Mussolini and the United States. I don't know if there's proof of them helping the fascists, but they didn't do anything to stop them. Russia, at the time, was on the side of the keeping the government in power, the progressive government, but they were also run by Stalin at the time, so that was problematic. Anyway, the revolution was eventually defeated, and Franco came to power in, 39, or was it earlier than that?
39, and he died in 74.
Yeah, and Franco was in...
It's around the time Portugal had their revolutions of the roses.
74, yeah. Franco was a notorious fascist dictator, and part of the repression and killings and stuff was focused on any attempt for Catalonian independence, including repressing the Catalan language. People were supposedly not allowed to speak Catalan, managed to survive underground. There was repression of, anyone speaking in favor of independence, et cetera, political repression in general under Franco. Now, even after Franco died and there was a transition period, Francoists, meaning pro-fascist people in the government, continued, and they set up they kept the monarchy in place, and the monarchy was pro-Franco, and this is in Spain. They set up a constitution that is now being used as a club to try to pound the pro-independence people down, try to repress them. And so what happened recently, over a number of years, not just this year, but recently, is that Catalonia independence has been increasing. The mood for it, the votes for it, et cetera. And they definitely have a majority in favor of independence, despite what you may have heard if you heard anything about this. And they had a referendum recently that was suppressed. The people that were doing the referendum said a majority voted for it. The Spanish state brought police in. Infamous pictures I think it was in September or October when that referendum happened. Was it October 1st, I think, maybe? Infamous pictures of Spanish police taking ballot boxes away from people, beating up old people trying to defend the ballots, etc. The Catalonian autonomous government that has been allowed to exist for a number of years with very limited powers, they have recently come out in favor of independence. That sounds weird. They were always for independence nominally, but what they've done is they've taken some steps to declare independence officially. It wasn't clear that was going to happen, but they did it. Because, you know, there's a sort of right wing and a left wing and so on to the independence movement, and they were kind of not the left wing, let's put it that way. But they did go ahead and declare independence, and that just happened in the last couple of weeks, and then the Spanish government is now, just as of today, it's arrested two leaders right away, and they've gone after the rest of the leadership. And that actually happened just like today or yesterday. They and one of them went to Belgium. One of the leaders, the like president of the autonomous government, went to Belgium and was given a euro.
Was he exiled?
Well, he went there to be in exile. But the euro government is now, on behalf of Spain, giving him, either arrested him or served a warrant. I'm not sure what went through. And they moved in over the last week. They moved in Spanish, police. And Spanish civil, authorities to go in and take over Catalonia. Now, what people need to know that is not expressed in the corporate media, because the corporate media really quick came out of the box against Catalonian independence, whether it was national propaganda radio here or whether it was the BBC in Britain or whatever, they clearly came out, the corporate media clearly came out against independence right from the start. And
same way they did with Scotland when they wanted their independence.
Exactly. In fact, even to the point of doing a massive propaganda campaign of having celebrities and stuff say they're against Catalonian independence and all that. But it's not working as well in Catalonia because the support for independence was already there among the vast majority. And they've had massive demonstrations and all sorts of nonviolent actions in support of independence. And it's clear the social weight is for independence. And clear the majority for independence, but doesn't stop the corporate media from saying, oh, well, you never had a vote, and you never, that referendum was a little unclear. Yeah, you made that referendum unclear because you attacked it and tried to destroy and suppress the results. But there have been other referendums that have shown majorities, and they've also had elections that have elected pro-independence, politicians. And in fact, the elected autonomous government voted for independence. The vast majority voted for independence. All these facts can get just either ignored or, misshapen and mutated within the corporate media. So then, for example, the right wing the anti-independence people had a rally, one rally or one or two in this whole period of months where the pro-independence people have had rallies after rallies that have been huge. So they had a rally that was against independence. And all of a sudden, the corporate media started to report on this, But the reality was that the rally was comprised of a lot of people bussed in from other parts of Spain, and also outright fascists were there, because that's part of the fascist mythology of Spain. So this is a wholesale attack. And the thing that listeners have to understand, and then you can do the research easily, well, if you do it in European source, you can do it pretty easily, is that the way the corporate media is framing it here is that Catalonia is a rich region. They don't want to pay taxes for the rest of Spain. This is complete nonsense. This is not a function of anyone except maybe some right-wing pro-independence people, or not right-wing, but conservative pro-independence people. That have dreams of a capitalist Catalonia. A lot of people are on the left in Catalonia, want a socialist Catalonia, or there's some sort of progressive thing happening.
Huh, same with like Ireland.
Yes, well, socialist here's the versus. Deal, right? Here's the deal. They would pass, before this really kicked up recently, they had the autonomous government, they would pass rules about, say, housing in Barcelona, like rent control or stuff like that. And the rules would work their way to the Spanish state for final approval, because autonomy is not independence. And the Spanish state would just say, no. No, sorry, you can't have that law for social housing in Barcelona. And a whole bunch of progressive legislation would go through, or legislation that people wanted in Catalonia, and it was not respected, and it was not allowed to go through. That's never reported on, but that's the truth. Now, what I have here is an article I would urge people to read from socialistworld.net, 28th October, from Esquerra Revolucionaria. That's the Committee for Workers International grouping in Catalonia. Committee for Workers International is a socialist group of over 40 parties and groups around the world. Socialist Alternative in the United States is in political solidarity with the Committee for Workers International. And they just go right to the point. They go, defeat Article 155 and Francoist repression. Defeat them with mass mobilization, because Francoist repression is what I said earlier, that basically the Constitution being used to say that independence is illegal was one written by the Francoist government even after he died. So the declaration of the Catalan Republic by the Catalan Parliament has provoked an immediate reaction from the state. The PP, that's the conservative government in power now in Spain, and its allies, Ciudadanos and PSOE, which is a nominally socialist party, but not really, they've all lined up to attempt to crush the will of the people, which was expressed on October 1st. Yeah, that's when that referendum was. By exercising the right to decide their future despite brutal police violence, and after a historic general strike 2 days later, the response of the state, inherited from Francoism and the establishment parties to revolutionary crisis in Catalonia, is to suppress the movement. We, as revolutionary Marxists who oppose all forms of national class oppression, insist that the struggle for a Catalan Republic has to be linked to a political program of action against cuts, austerity, and austerity, which breaks with the logic of capitalism and the domination of the oligarchy, both Spanish and Catalan. The Catalan Republic must be a republic of the people, the oppressed, the youth, and the workers. So I don't have time to go much into this article, but basically it's calling for a socialist, a democratic socialist Catalonia, with wide-ranging demands, nationalizing the big banks and the big corporations, that sort of thing. For a fight for independence, but not just stop there, but for a socialist republic and a federal socialist republic throughout Spain, because there are other, like we said earlier, there are other parts of the country that want to secede. The struggle is already winning natural solidarity with the oppressed mass of Europe and the world, etc. Now, there is support over in Europe. You don't hear much about it here. You mentioned you saw some flags at MIT. It's just sad what the ignorance is here. And it's also a weird thing to understand more about socialism. We can't really go into this too much, but there are socialists or nominally socialists that don't support Catalonian independence because they take a real mechanical approach to the question of self-representation or self-determination. Anything that has the word state or nation on it, they're automatically against, even though it could be a transitional nation of a workers' government or a socialist government, you know, leading towards a point where, yeah, you don't need states or borders in the future, but right now they're there. And the way a lot of people understand their repression is not that clear, and they might be like, well, if we just had our own people in there, meaning Catalonians, things will be better, rather than thinking, oh, they need to be in some sort of socialist alliance with other oppressed nationalities fighting for their own state. But what kind of state is the key? You know, it's going to be just a mini capitalism in Catalonia, or it's going to be a socialist Catalonia. Now, that's up for debate and discussion and struggle, but a step towards that would be an independent Catalonia. And it's weird to me, and I think weird to other socialists, that you would be a socialist and you would be loyal to bourgeois or, you know, pro-capitalist or capitalist borders. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we can't have people leaving this borders that was set up by genocide and displacement and repression and blood and wars. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like all of Europe, if you read the history of where those borders came from, it's not pretty. It's
like Central America.
Yeah, exactly. Or Middle East.
There was a talk in Central America, my mother's, family, where they had a vision of a united Central America.
Yeah, Bolivarian type stuff, yeah.
Exactly.
Yep, exactly.
All America. Yep. All one Colombia.
Yep.
Or, you know.
And
even that is like my grandfather used to say, bourgeoisie.
But it's not just
the whole concept of a Colombia. Yep. That's like a concept of America, you know?
But the divisions are not necessarily just based on the formality of a state. It's what the essence of the state is, for what use it's being done. Is it controlled by working people? Is it part of an attempt to go international or to stay parochial and local? And this is the struggle.
Nicaragua was one of those that, you know, and even that's going, you know.
Right.
You can't have one socialist state within all these other states that are run by capitalism. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You're in a pool of, you know.
Yep. But a lot of people aren't there yet. And so it's a question of, well, as a socialist, do I support the people struggling for self-determination? And the answer is, if it makes kind of sense, you know, they have a common more or less language, common more or less geographic area. They've been pushing for independence and so on. If all these things come together, you say, yeah, why not support that? They should have their own right to that. What does it matter that it breaks up or destabilizes Spain? Good. Who wants Spain to be an established capitalist state doing its will, which right now this conservative government is hurting lots of, you know,
that's like in the 60s with the Congolese, you know, independence.
Yep,
from
exactly.
Belgium.
Well, there's a million.
And they had to get rid of Lumumba because they feared that he was going to bring that unity,
yep.
African unity.
Yep.
And then look at it now.
Yep. Nasser
still
talked about it.
Still ran by national, yep. national corporations. And
Nasser talked about it in Egypt and et cetera. There's a tendency towards that, and it's contradictory. How could someone fighting for a small country and the independence of a small area or a relatively small area, how does that fit into internationalism? Well, because it destabilizes the nationalist order that the capitalists set up, and it can be a step towards what you're talking about, linking up with other countries, you know, in an international federation. And that's also another article, Catalonia, Red Joy's furious response to the proclamation of the Republic from socialistworld.net, 31st October. It goes into more detail about what the parliament is doing there and what's happening in Spain. This is written from the perspective of that last article was from Socialists Within Catalonia. This is from Izquierda Revolucionario, Socialists Within Spain, who are supporting Catalonian independence. There are Spanish socialists and Spanish workers and so on supporting Catalonian independence.
I feel the majority of Spanish people are that, you know, is the little minority of fascists that still run it.
I don't know the answer to that. That's a really good question. And I'm afraid that the answer, I'm not so sure about the majority, because there's a lot of problems in Spain, and it's easy to find a scapegoat on of the Catalonian independence movement, you know, and they've got everything weighed against them: the power of the Euro media, corporate media, you know, of European corporate media, Spanish corporate media, the Spanish state in the form of the army, the police, and everything. But the Catalonians that are fighting for independence, they've sworn to continue, and they are using a lot of, right now, they're saying, you know, completely nonviolently, and it's not going to go away. Even if it seems to go away, it's not going to. And that's the really ignorant thing about these repressions that happen. They haven't learned historically that they don't work, you know. So we're starting to run out of time here. Any last words, Diego? Welcome back as a co-host from time to time. I hope you can make it in the future from time to time.
Definitely.
No pressure, but whenever it works out, I know you're busy. So any last words to the listening public?
Here's another year to survive in capitalism for me.
Happy birthday again.
Thank you, and keep your head up. Power to the people and the workers.
Yeah, and
workers unite. That's what I.
And
that's my goal.
Yep, and we will. Well, next time we see you, if it's say 2 weeks or beyond, we'll know the results of the election in Minneapolis. We'll know more about the anti-Trump movement, off and on, and waxes and wanes, and you know, let us know if you want to bring on some more information about those books you were talking about. That would be cool.
Yeah,
we could talk about those.
I was gonna bring the one with Tariq Ali.
Yeah,
but it got recalled, and I'm just waiting for it to come back.
Yeah,
because I left off at page 134.
I might be in line for that too.
So yeah, definitely want to bring that book.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening to Socialist Alternative Radio. We're here every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. And keep your fingers crossed for the election of a socialist to city council in Minneapolis, and turn out if there's a rally in your area right now against 1 year of Trump. Turn out for that, and one of the ones in this area is November 16th, 1 p.m. Clark University in Worcester. Thanks again for listening, and have a good day.